7th Avenue Pizza, the official pizza of the Soda Pod.
The Soda Pod, the official beer and hockey podcast of 7th Avenue Pizza.
And hello, everybody. Welcome back to MNCAA. It is episode number 107. Time to talk about some of the playoff results throughout or across the state of hockey. Big Ten up first with our friends Nate Wells, Drew Cove. Both of you, welcome back to the show. Let's describe the energy in the room right now for you both, because let's just say that I think around most of our teams, the energy is nervous. It's not as maybe celebratory as we wanted it to be, as we were predicting these matchups last weekend. Nate, we'll start with you.
Certainly. It's a little bit of a missed opportunity for Minnesota, where the Gophers are going to enter the NCAA tournament as a top 10 team. They're going to be a top 2 seed in the tournament, but they weren't able to win the Big Ten regular season. They weren't able to raise a conference tournament banner after losing to Michigan for the third straight year at Mariucci Arena. But they have one more opportunity after an off week this week. We'll be able to next week discuss what's going on with the Gophers. But I guess for now, we're going to just pretty much repeat some deja vu.
And Drew, you know, this is kind of frustrating too for Gophers fans, right? Because as we talked on this show, and Nate really for the past couple of weeks has highlighted Michigan, where, you know, this is a team that has the talent that we know, but for whatever reason can decide to show up when and kind of where it wants to. Let's just say that whenever the games become, shall we say, more critical, that talent seems to come out, shall we say, more and more consistently. And unfortunately, it proved to be the same result here at Mariucci. Again, as you mentioned, Nate mentioned, third straight year in Mariucci that the Gophers unable to beat the Wolverines in Big Ten conference tournament play. Your reaction to the game, Drew, and maybe some things that Gophers fans, although feeling disappointed right now, maybe, but some things to still hang your hats on a bit.
Yeah, I do think that over the course of the season, I think it was looking more and more likely that the Gophers weren't going to be really in contention for the regular season title for sure, but also kind of be in that middle ground where they are going to make the tournament, whether they win the conference tournament or not. So not that this game was make or break, like, all right, they're done forever. But obviously for some guys, it was the last game they're ever going to play at Mariucci Arena, and like some of the older guys that certainly came back, and it meant a lot to them to play for this program and to rep the team going forward into another postseason. That's probably not the way you want to end your career at a barn that has, at least in their tenure, had a lot of life lately, which is good. And not to say it's just a shell, but I mean, you're not going to remember a building as fondly if you lose a bunch there and if the atmosphere is kind of dull. So Mariucci has been the opposite of that in the last, in these seniors' tenures. So sans COVID, of course, but I do think that, yeah, like you said, missed opportunity, but I don't think it's the end of the world. Obviously, you'd like to be able to show that you can continue to beat Michigan like you have in the regular season, but for some reason, it's like a bad penny. You know, this game is just not, if it's in the Big Ten conference postseason and it's at Mariucci, it's just the Gophers have not. They've set themselves up all regular season to win that game, and then they don't. So good news is that, I mean, Gophers now just have to wait till selection Sunday, a week from now, and they'll figure it out. They're going to be in the tournament, so I don't think it's any love lost from that standpoint. But, yeah, just disappointing that you weren't able to get a few more on a Michigan team that can be at times pretty porous defensively.
And Nate, I want to kind of build on this too, because as we've talked about before, right, Michigan, it seems that, you know, first of all, their Big Ten start was abhorrent in terms of getting themselves into conference play. Not a great record, but slowly but surely, it seems like the team has continued to build off of some momentum they've created. Again, the talent comes out. And for whatever reason, now as we hit now into the postseason, seems like they're starting to find the stride more consistently, I think, is the big key here. So big question is are the Wolverines, I should say, are they hitting the stride at the right time, or do they just have the Gophers number right now?
a little bit of both, where for Michigan, in a way, it's kind of like that college kid who knows what's going on. They can write that paper at the last minute, procrastinate all semester, and still get that A. Maybe that's a little bit of what's going on with the Wolverines. But at the same time, they are just – they're able to win games the way that they are, where they get out to a lead. They didn't have that, like, insanely bad stretch. They haven't had it the last little – they didn't have the weekend before against Notre Dame as badly as it was. They didn't see it as much against Minnesota. So maybe in that aspect where you're cleaning things up a little bit as it comes to postseason time, the Wolverines are able to do it. And I think the biggest surprise with this game – compared to the other two with Minnesota and the Big Ten champion and conference tournament, those two were the championship games. This is the semifinal. Is that this felt like a tournament game more than the other ones where both teams are going back and forth? It's very tight. You have solid goaltending, and these are the NCAA tournament games that Minnesota and Michigan are going to be ending up facing in when we are talking about tournament time.
It's crazy, right, Drew? Jimmy Snugger with the only goal for goal last night, coming essentially, you know, under a minute to play, I believe. I was catching the tail end of that hockey game. And, you know, as much as, Nate, we like to say, yep, Michigan has defensive, you know, some liabilities there. And I think that is still true. But, Drew, Michigan really putting the clamp on Minnesota's offense for the majority of that game. What did you notice about the Wolverines and how they approached some of the Gopher star players, especially on the offensive side of the puck?
I think especially on the offensive side, I mean, they just capitalized on on the mistakes, the tiny little mistakes that obviously end up being big mistakes when their goals against. But I think just from the Gophers kind of doing their thing, Michigan was able to be aggressive like they have, I think, lately this season to kind of make some of those big differences that they've had in obviously the results they're getting and kind of this push to the postseason when a few weeks ago we were like, I don't know if they're going to make it. And now they look pretty sure to make it. So I think they're using some of that aggressive style and some of that speed that they have to really just to force poor decisions. And I think the Gophers have, I mean, a couple of turnovers yesterday, some bad decision-making kind of under the heat of the moment leads to a breakaway goal against. It leads to just Michigan kind of getting the offense that they need and just a bad rebound kind of thing. And it's like just those little things. And just Minnesota's offense just didn't have that life to come back. They were held under 25, 30 shots. I think it was like 23 or 24 shots for the Gophers last night. And that's not an effort you usually see, not an effort, but that's usually not a result you see from this Gopher squad that is, as we say every single week, very deep offensively.
Oh, Drew, and I think you kind of hit on that effort. It wasn't the best effort until the very end for Minnesota, like when they needed to find a way to come back and get away and get around Michigan, and which is something that they've done twice already this year against the Wolverines. At the same time, though, it really is a reminder. And I just feel like we've mentioned this a few times throughout the year, where when we're the most confident about the Gophers and the Gophers feel very confident about themselves, that feels like the opportunity when you're going to have that let up. We had that for that Wisconsin series at the beginning of the year. There was the Notre Dame series game where just everything went wrong a few weeks ago. And we're fairly confident entering this weekend too. So, you know, maybe that is something there. But on the other side, the Gophers, when they face adversity, when they face those hiccups, they have been able to change things up, kind of reassess and put on their best performances. So that might also be something that will be a solid aspect as they enter the NCAA tournament.
And Drew, you know, is that going to be the key takeaway, do you think, for the Gophers is, you know, not necessarily being opportunistic, but more so understanding that defensively, right? It's all going to be about puck management in their own zone, making sure the pucks are getting out efficiently and being more in the forecheck, right? I think if there's anything we saw Michigan expose a bit, which was some concerns we had earlier in the season, right? Which is you lose some stalwarts in the back end. There were some questions of how the defensive core would look. And I don't want to say under pressure because it is a playoff type game, but it did seem like Michigan really putting, shall we say, taking away the time and space from the goal for D. And I think the Gopher struggled a bit, especially just getting the puck on their own end. Is that a lesson you take away?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is. It is all about just getting the pucks moving north and having the defenders having a clean breakout and getting it to the offensive players that they can, you know, take it and then do what they need to. But That's going to be, I think, a key point of emphasis that the team is going to need to take from film sessions and playing against some of the, a team of the caliber of Michigan. I mean, Michigan's going to slot in as a seed, as one of the seeds of what the Gophers are probably going to be playing first round here. So obviously they're going to try to avoid playing conference mashups. They're not going to play Michigan in the first, in the quarterfinal round. But if a team can find a way to use Michigan's tape to exploit and just be aggressive against Minnesota's D and they're not prepared for it, they're going to have a tough time. And I think they've shown leaps and bounds of just growth this season and making that happen and being connected with each other and the offensive players. But they're going to need to have clean breakouts and to make sure that they don't make silly decisions with the puck in their own zone to cause things to go haywire. And for the plan, kind of, I think a team that is like this, it's just, it's important that they follow the plan. They're experienced enough. They are old enough that they know, we have a plan. We know it works, and we just need to stick to it to win. And sometimes when that plan goes awry, not necessarily by their own doing, but if they have those self-inflicted wounds that can cause some other teams to take advantage, that that is not what you want. Because, I mean, if you can't come back from two goals against, you can't give up those two goals. I mean, if you can only score one goal, if you only know you have one goal offensively that night, you need to make sure you shut the door on the back end.
And I think, you know, as Minnesota waits for its fate, gentlemen, right, number eight right now in the pairwise. So if, shall we say, everything holds still over the next week and a half or so, mind you, still some conference tournament action still the next week and a half or so, Gophers should be a two seed. And as Nate, we like to use the phrase bracket integrity around these parts, right? If that holds still, the Gophers likely heading east for the regional. But yet, still things to decide later on. But what we should do, is what I don't think we want to do necessarily, but I think we should do, is preview the Big Ten championship game. It's an all Michigan battle. Michigan State, who won the regular season for the first time in Big Ten history, then against the Wolverines, who at one point 16, 17, the pairwise guys are up to 10. So as you mentioned, I wouldn't say they're a shoe-in, but they're pretty comfortable right now. If you're in that, you know, top 10 tier, your chances of slipping down, especially now this late in the season, a little bit less, we should say. So let's get to our predictions and what to look forward to in the Big Ten championship game. Nate, I want to start with you. To me, it's a game of offense. Michigan State, you got some big names, you know, more importantly, Isaac Howard, again, member of the World Juniors, former Bulldog, in his sophomore season. Of course, Gravin Brindley, who scored last night, Rutger McGrody for Michigan. There's some names to watch here. This could be quite the offensive showcase if both coaches probably wouldn't like to have it that way, but could evolve in that way. What do you think you're going to see out of this matchup?
It's a game where both teams have something really to prove, where if you're Michigan State, you are a program who has extremely struggled throughout the Big Ten postseason until last year, never won a Big Ten conference tournament game, which is an insane feat to pull off over 9 years. You are a team that's full of transfers, your team that does not really have this postseason experience at all, and they'll be entering the NCAA tournament. So if you're Michigan State, you have almost a best case scenario of you're playing a team that you're very familiar with for this championship. You're playing your big rival, and you have something to prove and to be able to show that, hey, our game translates to the postseason success and that we can do this and we can win a conference tournament against a program that has historically been the best when it comes to this conference tournament. And if you're Michigan, you're facing another one of your teams that have been just your demons throughout the entire season, where the Wolverines have won one of the four games against Michigan State. Coincidentally, the only game they won was the one that was played in Munn Arena, where this championship will be played. But they've also had games where they probably could have won two of the other three that they lost, where they're able to score in bunches and just they let the games go away. Michigan State just is very resilient and they're able to come back. For me, as much as we talk about the goal scorers for both teams, what is really going to be come down to is who has the better goaltending. Trey Augustine has looked fantastic. Also, during talking about the World Juniors, he backstopped Team USA to that this past December and January. And then you have Michigan, where you have that postseason experience with Rachevsky in goal. You have a team that made back-to-back Frozen Fours. And you know how important goaltending and defense is this time of year. So for me, that's where it's really going to come down to, as much as we have talked about these fire high power offenses.
And Drew, Nate brings up, I think, a perfect coaching point, right? You know the offensive ability on either side. I think as a coach, you definitely want to not let this game become a track meet. We saw what Michigan can do, and especially in transition. They can skate, you know, fill in your choice phrase of how fast they can skate. It's pretty good. And Michigan State, too, they can take opportunities also in transition, also more opportunistic as well in terms of the turnovers. But I want to get your side on the defensive side, right? Because I really do think, to Nate's point, goaltending will be a big part of it. You know, it sounds cliche, you know, when we get to this point of the season, but Trey Augustine, who has been, shall we say, the bigger name in college hockey when it comes to his lame leg, but you can't forget the guy in Michigan too, a very good goaltender himself. What do we look on the defensive end of both these squads?
Yeah, and just kind of seeing, obviously we saw Barchevsky last year with the Gophers in the tournament, but obviously I think he was obviously one of the brighter spots of that lineup.
And he backstopped Canisius too, because they were like the 6th or 7th seed in Atlantic hockey. So he was one of the big reasons why they're even in that position to begin with.
He just likes playing hockey in March, man. What can you do? It's hard to, if you're just like, man, you can't get ready for October, November, but man, you stay in it long enough to be like, all right, it's March. I love doing this. And I don't know, maybe he's just got that other gear. Maybe that's why he's such a competitor and he gets it in him. But I mean, I'm hard pressed to pick against Augustine if you're going goalie for goalie. Just seeing what that guy's done all year, and just making sure that his team is with the offensive prowess is put in a good position to make it to this point, sort of unexpectedly, a little bit less unexpectedly than Wisconsin played all year. But we knew they were going to be good, but I didn't know if we'd realize they'd be this good so far this year. But it is going to come down to, I think, rebound control and making sure goalies can keep pucks from being turned into just, I mean, gifted one-timer chances and rushes up and down the ice. Just to keep the game calm and steady, I think it'd be really important to mitigating that Michigan offense for sure. So, I mean, if Augustine and the defense can do that, I think they definitely have the upper hand.
And so, guys, we don't normally do this, Nate. Didn't mean to cut you off, but who do you think raises the Big Ten tournament trophy next week, Saturday? Is it the Wolverines or is it the Spartans for the first time in their program history?
I think it's going to be the Spartans in an electric Munn Arena crowd. It is going to be insane there. This is the reason you bring these games on campus. I was just thinking back to this past weekend where Minnesota, Michigan, again, over 10,000 people there. You sell out Mariachi Arena. They keep doing that. And even going back to a few years before, I think Bryce Brodzinski broke the record for the most games played by a Gopher. And I don't know if that record will ever be broken because of the extra COVID year now and how things go. But when you started 2019-20, you have those weekends, those first round series where, yes, they go against the high school hockey tournament. And it's always a tough sell. It was a tough sell prior to the Big Ten. But just seeing those crowds against Michigan, where there's maybe family and friends and maybe a couple other stragglers who just lost on a frat row party on University Avenue, to what we're seeing now, these Big Ten things. I know that ticket in East Lansing is going to be one of the hottest tickets to get in Michigan over the next week. So I think I would not be shocked if Michigan pulls it off. This is their time of year where they're in conference tournament, but I really do like how Michigan State has played against Michigan this year, though. And having help, I think, helps.
And Drew, does Michigan State seem like the team of destiny this year? Again, you know, sort of their rise really starting from last season. They've built on that this year, have been near the top or at the top of the Big Ten throughout the regular season. Again, have gotten themselves to this spot. Do they finish it off and do they, you know, let this dreamlike season continue with another good finisher in the Big Ten tournament?
This feels like it could be a really big year for the postseason for this program just as a whole. I mean, imagine if they make the Frozen Four. Like, that would be, I mean, they're going to be the favorites in whatever regional they're in to make it. But I mean, boy, would that be cool to see Michigan State just kind of surge back onto the scene and to say, all right, here we're back. We might have taken 20 years off, but we're back and ready to compete. And just what that'll do recruiting wise, it won't be good for the Gophers, mind you, but Even more Michigan, just because they'll be starting to take some of those teams, some of those players. And obviously they do have that NTDP pipeline pretty strong, but I mean, they're going to be catching a lot of other top end players eye instead of what it was, kind of scrounging for just a top line talent. I can think of three guys in the last 10 years for Michigan State and just the KHL line, and that's about it. And then that was kind of the peak of talent under the Dan Cole years. So I can't even remember the other coach's name off the top of my head right now.
Nastas.
Yeah, there we go.
It's been quite the break, right? I mean, and to see again another program within the Big Ten, you know, take this rise under the leadership of Nightingale, what a job he's done to resurrect this program. And you know, call me crazy, but I also think Brandon Nerado for Michigan deserves some credit too, with all the things that he's had to deal with for the past year and a half. Especially some of the off seasons, or maybe I should say the off ice issues that Michigan had faced. That seems to be well in the past now. So good for them and continuing to push Michigan to the brink too, guys. So with that being said, let's recap where the Big Ten teams are at. Four, at least right now, slated to be a part of the NCAA tournament. Again, Wisconsin, after getting upset in the quarterfinal, still in a good pairwise position. I think they're sitting seventh.
They're ninth.
But Michigan State at five, so they're the number one team in the Big Ten in terms of the pairwise ranking. Minnesota at eight, Wisconsin nine, and then Michigan at 10, so a logjam. But all those teams in prime positions to be a part of the NCAA tournament. Wisconsin also being back, I think, is going to be good for college hockey. Again, a program that has, shall we say, I think we all could agree, is maybe could have done better over the past couple of years. Good to see them back in the tournament. But guys, still plenty of things yet to still be really sorted out here. We're talking about that last six, right? A lot of these are either auto bids, especially a lot of eyes looking out east. How about this? UMass defeating Providence could give UMass a decent chance to host in Springfield. There's a couple of Sunday night games as we are recording. First of all, it's CC and Omaha for the battle to get to St. Paul, as is St. Cloud State and Western Michigan. Last I checked, the Huskies are up 4-1 in that game in the second period. So looking good, at least as far as our teams that we cover for concern. But Nate, at the end of the day, Colorado College, they're sitting around 11-12. Western Michigan, I think they're sitting in that same spot. St. Cloud State, technically at 16. I think for the Huskies, we talked about it before, and we'll dive more deeply into this with the NCHC crew, but probably have to win out. And I would think that between the Mavericks and the Tigers, I think if you get to St. Paul with where you're at in the pairwise, I wouldn't say you're a lock, but you're that much closer to getting your spot, more in concrete, getting into an NCAA auto bid situation. What do you think?
I think the winner the winner of CC Omaha is pretty much can breathe lightly. Whoever loses is going to have a really tough week, because you're really kind of fighting with UMass and maybe St. Cloud. They're able to kind of steal a bid. Anyone in the ECAC that's not Quinnipiac will steal a bid. And you're in that little area where you need things to go right, but you can't control anything. That's gonna be the tough part. Personally, and I mean, we're recording this before that game goes final or whatever. I mean, Omaha has not made a conference semifinal since 2001. Mm-hmm. There's only seven. I tweeted this earlier today, the day we recorded this, but there's only seven members of that team that are old enough to be alive when that happened. They haven't won a conference. They haven't won a series at all since 2010. And that was when they're in the CCHA. That was two leagues ago. So this is how long Omaha's
the old CCHA.
The old CCHA. Yeah, the CCHA died and came back in between the times that Omaha has not made it. So and Omaha had 2 years in the WCHA too, or 2-3 years in the WCHA too. So they've had that stretch where they haven't been able to make it to St. Paul either. But they have this year and they have next year. So this has been one of the crazy things, because I think they've made the tournament since 2001 four times, and this could be five without making it to St. Paul. So it'd be nice for them to get there. But yeah, it's just they've had a stretch of really weird postseason success.
really, really bizarre, and really good coach down there in Mike Gavin. A really great guy too. If you ever get a chance to speak with him, he's one heck of a great dude on the college hockey side of things. Drew, also, you know, big eyes as we mentioned out east, just because they could be, you know, the spoilers essentially, right? I think AIC won earlier on Saturday to give us some more Atlantic Hockey Conference kind of fun, and then how about Quinnipiac and the ECAC? Right? Are these guys set up as far as the ECAC, like, to be potential at-large bid Steelers? I mean, where are we at with this, with the folks out east?
Yeah, I mean, not someone who's been paying so much attention to the teams out east, because I'm a Western college hockey snob.
I'm putting you on the spot here today, Drew. So
hey, no, that's A-okay. But I mean, look,
there's two of us. One of us lives out east. One of us does not live out east. Let's talk to the guy who lives on the east side of the metro to get.
Yeah, that's as east as I get. It's the barely east of the Mississippi. And but I mean, it is kind of crazy that AIC is just always in that mix to kind of mess up a lot of people's. To mess up your St. Cloud type thing. It's like, geez, it's like they're so close, like. They're gonna mess up all these teams who are just on the fringe. Talk about a case that's a little bit better than Arizona State is some of the teams being like, man, these AIC shouldn't be in this tournament. But like, the teams that are on the fringe, the 15, 16, 17, it's like the teams that top 16 should. I don't know. Maybe that's just too hot of a take. But it is difficult when there are some teams that are like, oh man, we're so close to being in, but it's like, all right, we got to have a conference to have their winner be in. And it's like, look at Bemidji, they're 53% to make the tournament just as a qualifier. So, and they're a ways down there. No offense to Bemidji, but they're in the smack dab middle of the pairwise rankings. So,
they are. Yeah,
it is tough. When some of those schools out east, obviously in the lower powered conferences, kind of take some of the wind out of the sails for the teams that maybe have a late season surge or have something like that to try and push for the tournament, only to be upended by a team that's just going to have a really tough go in that first game.
Pretty crazy, right, Nate? Bemidji State against Michigan Tech for the CCHA championship next Saturday. So Mankato was also done after they were stunned 4-3. I believe a goal in the last, 19 seconds or so? It's just pretty crazy. Again, a one and done in their semifinal. Just heartbreaker, right?
It's too bad like no one's really gonna want to talk about that anyway during the CCHA section. I mean, you're just gonna be like, no. So here's 40 minutes about Bemidji. Mankato lost. You won't have like the half of the CCHA crew just up in arms about like five weird refereeing calls. No.
I might have like two guests actually show up because they're going to be in a mental state to do it. Pretty nuts. So, but guys,
that section will be sponsored by like the pitchforks and torches.
Yeah, and you know, I know that refereeing, we talk about it, you know, here and there on the podcast. I shouldn't say I talk about it. Max Veach, I swear he should just have his own segment on officiating, because that would it would blow up like crazy. Mm-hmm. But the CCHA there were definitely some questionable reviews. I guess a goal that looked to be kicked in and then it was ruled a goal. And I guess fans on both sides going, really, you let that one go? I mean, just interesting, right? But I want to finish on a different note here, guys. We want to bring it back to the Gophers and more so the women's team. The women's team, a quadruple overtime loss to Clarkson, 4-3. A Gophers team that I don't want to say looked vulnerable, but they didn't have, shall we say, that killer instinct we've seen from them in years past. Still a heck of a season. And mind you, when they get Ayla Puppy next year, they're going to be right back there. My goodness, they're going to be loaded up front again. But I want to start with you, Drew. Your reaction to the quadruple overtime finish in the Gophers season, unfortunately coming to an end at the behest of Clarkson last night.
It's obviously unfortunate for a team that's been they've been at near the top the last few years, and they just haven't pulled through and won the national championship, obviously, in recent years, especially with Wisconsin being at the top of their game and just being an otherworldly team at various points, and now Ohio State kind of taking that mantle. But it's disappointing because talking to a lot of the women on the team this year was good to just to figure out kind of the culture of this team and just how close knit they all are, and just all the family ties legitimately on this team. and kind of seeing how they've had success at a lot of different levels, not just Abby Murphy, but yeah, it's tough kind of with just slightly lower seed than Clarkson, but obviously, I mean, it makes sense why they were the four and the five. So yeah, disappointing to see them go out, but I mean, I think this team is always going to be near the top. And I think just with the, with some of the future, it's, yeah, it's going to be some question marks, certainly. Cause I think with Madeline Wethington kind of departing, that's regardless of who you have to fill it, that's a big hole to fill. And I just know that this team is going to probably find what they need, however way they do it, from just a recruiting standpoint to get that kind of next defender. But I think, yeah, disappointing way to end it. But I do think that this team is just, they're still going to be in the perennial contender club, even if they have to go against Ohio State and Wisconsin, kind of in that same stage of life.
Yeah, 100%. And Nate, as we close out this portion of episode number 107, predictions for the Gophers, and more so back to the men's side, as they take a week off and they look at some film and kind of dissect what they need to do in order to, you know, to essentially get themselves best prepared for whichever comes through. Nate, last year, they were up in the Fargo region. Shall we say that they escaped St. Cloud? And I say escaped, not because I'm a St. Cloud State homer, but I really do feel like if a puck didn't hop over a certain player's stick and didn't tie that game, that could have been a different outcome. Does Minnesota feel comfortable with A, being a two seed, and three, do they think that they have the same ability to get a lead, lock things down, and get themselves back to the Frozen Four, which in this case this year is just across the river in St. Paul?
Yeah, it's true. Thanks to the woods. I say it's not like I'm someone who grew up in St. Paul or anything, but
hey, half an hour from here, I could be there on a walk, 30-minute walk. That's it.
But it's funny you mentioned St. Cloud, Nick, because I kind of thought the last couple months where they feel like they are in that St. Cloud team from last year, kind of the same shoes where you can see this team finding ways to win as a two seed, being able to defeat top teams. Do they have the consistency to do it over four games? I'm not 100% sold on that. We've seen stretches where the Gophers look like they are a top five team, and they're closer to probably to the top five than they are to near 15. But right now, it's really going to look like that Minnesota is going to have to play BU, or they're going to play BC, and they're going to be playing it out east. So it'll be a tough matchup. They're going against teams that have depth, that have high powered scoring that we've seen, just like the Michigans of this past weekend, and we've seen them go against throughout the years. But at the same time, I think this is going to be a great test for the Gophers, and having that week off, having the ability to regroup and see that, hey, you can't have an off night. You can't come out slow. The mistakes that happen in the postseason, they get compounded. And when you fall behind, yes, you can come back. You have that ability, but you're not the 2023 version of you can come back from anything. You're a very resilient team, Gophers. And that does put them in a good position against any team in the NCAA field, that they have multiple ways to win. They are able to come back. When they're behind, they're not out of it, but they don't have exactly the same firepower. So when that puck goes over, cross over the stick, and it doesn't, they're unable to get that going. They may not get that second or third or fourth chance that last year's team may have done. So that's where I think it is with this year. And also, I guess I'll even tie it in with Drew to end this point with the Gopher women's. That's kind of what I felt like with how Minnesota was this year, where, you know, they are a top five team. They're probably closer to 4 and 5 than they are to 1-2. I think Ohio State, Wisconsin are by far 1-2 this year, and they really played out in the tournament's first weekend. You had that 4 overtime classic. I was just gripped to my seat, and just, I pretty much yesterday afternoon was just gone watching it. And really, that battle came down to Minnesota's top power play versus Clarkson's top penalty kill, where Minnesota, the only goal that they ever scored was it got overturned, and just they were able to create chances, just weren't able to take advantage, and Clarkson got the better of them as the game went on. You're seeing the Golden Knights get more and more of those chances. So, but I think at the end of the day, it's about what has happened. It was pretty much been a tournament of everyone kind of, they are who they thought we were. And I wonder if that's going to still be the case with the Frozen Four in New Hampshire. And I wonder if that's going to be the case as we enter the NCAA tournament for the men in a year that you can really say there really isn't a pure favorite. And that's a great news if you're a Minnesota Gopher hockey fan.
100%, guys, as we get down this road here again, conference tournaments finishing up. Selection Sunday is again a week from our time of recording, which is the previous Sunday, which is on the 17th. So by the time we record next week, the tournament field should be set. We will know the Gophers' final pairwise number and, more importantly, where they will be headed. And as Nate Wells like to say, bracket integrity, right? Hopefully out east, more so wherever they end up, hopefully that they can make themselves back to St. Paul again for the Frozen Four. For everybody here, Nick Maxson, it is segment number one, your MNCAA next as the NCHC crew. Stick around.